Welcome to this introduction to the Grand Babylon Hotel, a New Vic Theatre production in association with Claybody Theatre. Arnold Bennett's book has been adapted for the stage by Deborah McAndrew, and the production is directed by Conrad Nelson. I'm Pam Beach, and along with Brenda Hennessy, we'll be audio describing the show on Saturday the 4th of October at 2:15 p.m. The touch tour will start at 1:15 and we'll meet you in the foyer in front of the box office a few minutes beforehand. The show lasts about 2.25 hours, including a 20-minute interval. Nella Raxol wants steak and beer for her birthday treat, but these are not on the menu of the exclusive Grand Babylon Hotel. So her American railroad millionaire father obligingly buys the chef, the kitchen, the entire hotel. However, the Grand Babylon is not all it seems, and Theodore Raxol soon discovers there's more than a juicy steak on his plate, with kidnapping and murder for starters. Have Theo and Nella bitten off more than they can chew? The show is a rollicking comedy thriller with a virtuoso cast of just 5, bringing chases, glamour, intrigue and many characters, a couple of German princes thrown in for good measure. Before I describe the set and locations, I'll tell you first about the auditorium in case you haven't visited this theatre before. The New Vic is a theatre in the round, with tiered, upholstered purple seats surrounding a 10-metre diameter circular stage. 3 evenly spaced, tunnel-like entrances lead up onto the stage. 2 are used by actors and audiences, and the 3rd, slightly larger main entrance, is used only by actors. Thinking of a clock face, if the main entrance is at 12 o'clock, the other 2 entrances are at 4 and 8 o'clock. During the audio description, we'll name the 4 o'clock entrance the right entrance and the 8 o'clock entrance the left entrance. By the main entrance towards 1 o'clock and beside the left entrance towards 9 o'clock, there are 2 sections of acting space we call notches. Behind the audience seating is a circular pathway known as the promenade. From it, 5 sets of aisle steps lead down to the stage. In the aisles, at the end of each row of seats, there are small handrails to assist ascent and descent. The aisles and promenade are used by both audience and actors. Above the promenade, a balcony houses 2 rows of seats and is edged with a safety barrier. Fixed high above the stage is a large lighting rig, complete with walkways known as the grid. Props may be stowed or suspended from here. The set for this show needs to accommodate scenes not only in various parts of the Grand Babylon Hotel in London in 1912, but also on board the Maria Henrietta steamer and a small yacht in the English Channel, as well as scenes in Ostend and on the Embankment in London. This was a challenge for Liz Evans, the New Vic's resident designer, who has designed both the set and the costumes. Liz has drawn inspiration for this task from photographs of period hotel foyers, furniture, fittings, equipment and boats. Seeing puzzle pieces of the era fitting together, especially hexagon shapes, inspired her design for a tiled floor to cover the whole stage, including the 20-centimetre high platforms in both notches. Polygon-shaped tiles tessellate with larger hexagons in a monotone colour palette of greys and beiges. The walls of the entrances leading to the stage are black. In the notch beside the main entrance is the reception desk of the hotel's foyer. In the notch by the left entrance, the maitre d's wooden lectern and a metal umbrella holder stand on the platform. Both platforms are backed with cream-painted wooden three-section panelling. The lower half of each section, below a waist-height shelf, is lightly painted with a motif of the floor pattern. The upper half of the panelling at the reception desk provides four shelves of open pigeonholes. In a few of them, room keys hang on hooks, along with luggage labels, bills and mail. Opposite, across the stage, the upper half of that panelling is open framed. Here, five Victorian servant bells are fixed along the frame top, small metal plaque labels beside them. A bell telephone with speaking tubes is attached to a corner. A bell telephone with speaking tubes is attached to a top corner of a panel in each notch. The reception's sturdy wooden Davenport-style desk stands on four flat bun feet. It has a sloped writing surface on which a ledger lies. The higher front part of the desk top makes an ideal place for a shiny brass counterbell to sit alongside a stylish period telephone. Down the side of the desk, four drawers have decorative brass handles. The receptionist sits on a bentwood chair with a round seat. The hotel foyer has palm court style Lord Loom furniture. Three jardinieres with ferns in them sit on wooden pedestals. As you can tell, the hexagon shape features a lot in this production's design. Small, pale grey, hexagonal cushions are found on chairs, and high above the stage, the floor pattern is reflected in three hexagonal light boxes about 70 centimetres in diameter. Before the show starts, interspersed over the stage are two grey Lloyd Loom chairs and a matching occasional table. A large wicker laundry skip, a linen sheet hanging out of it, a tall chrome bellman's cart with a large old brown trunk on it, and a group of three small brown suitcases. As the play begins, these will be moved by characters in a choreographed musical sequence to prepare for the first scene. With so many locations involved, they are simply defined within the space by lighting and with minimal props. All the aisles are used too, as the story unfolds at a fast pace. The Grand Babylon's Lounge is where we begin. Light focuses on the area in front of the right entrance, and the Lloyd Loom chairs and small table are placed there. For room 111, light focuses around 10-11 o'clock and just one chair. The room's bathroom is presumed to be out through the main entrance. Hotel corridors are shown as long rectangular patches of light on an otherwise dark stage. Sound effects provide for a creaking floorboard and actors mime pulling light cords and opening doors. An actor also mimes exploring a secret passage along shafts of light in the dark. In a scene where a body lies covered with a sheet on a metal embalming trolley, a lift is imagined at the main entrance, with a grating projected on the floor. For boarding the Maria Henrietta steamer, characters ascend the steps of the aisle at 11 o'clock, the ticket collector having removed a rope at the first step. Disembarkation at Ostend Docks is down an opposite aisle. A chaise longue placed at 3 o'clock with a grey blanket draped over it is the prop for a house in Ostend. In a later scene, when characters arrive there, the actors mime looking through a window holding an empty picture frame. During the interval, the maitre d's lectern is moved onto the stage in front of the platform where it stood during Act One, to become the middle of a yacht somewhere in the English Channel. The bow of the yacht is formed by a trunk stood end on and opened out to 90 degrees. A blue and white lifebuoy ring hangs on each side. At the stern, a wooden ship's wheel will be used on the platform. The trunk is later closed to transform it into a rowing boat, which characters sit on and propel with their feet and oars to escape on. For the state apartments at the hotel, light is focused at 10 o'clock on the cream chaise longue, now bearing a small cushion. Fern jardinières are either side of the main entrance, and a projection of sunlight through a window falls across the floor. The hotel's dark wine cellar covers the stage. Spaced out, four large barrels stand upright, a small barrel beside one of them. A packaged box and an open crate of red-topped wine bottles are piled on a sack barrow. Two barrels are used for the embankment scene, a character standing on each one, with a projection of the flowing River Thames between them. In a rainy London street scene, people scurry with black umbrellas across pavements covered with puddle projections. I have already mentioned a little about lighting and projections, which are important in a New Vic production, and these are created by our resident lighting designer, Daniela Beatty. I will just add that captions are projected on two walls of the auditorium. Like at silent movies, white captions appear on them to indicate locations and occasionally a time of day. The Grand Babylon Hotel will be showing on them before the show starts. As well as sound effects, music accompanying the play enhances it for us. James Atherton has composed and arranged this music. When you take your seat, you'll hear piano music, but it won't be long before a familiar Gilbert and Sullivan song surprises you. I'll now pass over to Brenda to tell you about the characters and their costumes.
Costumes date from the Edwardian era and complement the monotone setting of the Grand Babylon Hotel. We have a virtuoso ensemble cast of five actors, and three play many parts. And these three open the show with a musical overture. They're dressed as chambermaids on morning duty. They wear long, black, roomy pinafore dresses, gathered at the waist over long-sleeved white blouses, crisp white aprons, and a French maid's headpiece. Then, in a choreographed sequence, they transform into several characters, hotel staff and guests. Bellboys wear black uniforms, crop jackets over striped waistcoats, trousers and pillbox hats, one with a stick-on moustache. And one hotel guest wears a long black and gold sparkly dress with a long black chiffon scarf, a French-style pearl necklace and a feathered headdress, played by Michael Hugo. The efficient, experienced and maybe thought indispensable chief hotel clerk is one Miss Spencer. She's mature in years, of average height with a matronly figure. Her thick curly auburn hair, faded with the years, is swept back and pinned at the nape. She wears a white blouse with a high collar, a high-waisted black and white pinstripe skirt and solid black court shoes. Miss Spencer is played by Shelley Atkinson. Then we meet the confident American millionaire, Theodore Wraxall. He will address the audience. He's of mature years, of average height and build, with greying wavy hair parted on the left, and sports a neatly trimmed beard and moustache. He's in evening dress, a white jacket trimmed with black buttons, over a double-breasted white waistcoat decorated with a gold chain and pocket watch, over a stiff-collared dress shirt, a white bow tie and gold cufflinks, black trousers and black shoes. He wears a gold ring on his little finger of his left hand. The next morning he wears a black and white checked waistcoat, white shirt and wide black, grey and white tie. A white linen jacket is worn later. For outdoors, he dons a grey and black bold checked overcoat. Generally, he walks with a slowed gait and shortened step length and staggers down the aisle steps when a little tipsy. A cigar in hand orchestrates his speech. There's a lighter stowed in his waistcoat pocket. Raxol is played by Adrian Chang. Jules, the immaculate waiter, is in his 40s. He's of average height and he hasn't got an ounce of fat on him. His thinning brown hair is close cut. He walks, or rather glides, with his back ramrod straight, his left arms behind his back, his right hand held to the front at chest height. He wears a black tailcoat edged with grey and white striped piping over a black and white striped waistcoat. The stripes run horizontally. A white shirt and black tie teamed with black trousers and black shoes. When venturing outdoors, he wears a fine black and white herringbone checked overcoat and bowler hat. Jules is played by Michael Hugo. Theodore Raxol's feisty daughter, Nella, celebrates her 24th birthday. She's of average height and slim build. Her long blonde hair is swept off her face, rolled and fixed in an elaborate bun at the nape. A white flower and feather decorates her crown. Dressed for dinner, she floats in wearing a long, delicate black and white, geometric patterned overdress, draped over a long white dress. The overdress is caught at the waist with a black band and decorative centre flower. Nella wears white stockings and white button shoes trimmed with black. Pearl necklace, bracelet and earrings complete this outfit. On another evening, a black chiffon overdress is worn over the white dress. And for day wear, it's a slim-fitting grey and white patterned lace dress. And for outdoors, she wears a matching grey linen coat and hat trimmed with the same fabric. Her brown glossy handbag has a geometric design inlay and is unusually heavy. Briefly, Nella appears in a satin dressing gown. Nella is played by Alice Pryor. Reginald Dimmock is the English equerry to His Highness Prince Aribert of Posen. He's in his 30s, of average height and slim build. He's clean-shaven but has sideburns. His straight black hair is parted on his right. A few strands occasionally fringe his brow as he nervously and frequently cleans his gold-rimmed spectacles. He's dressed for dinner. He wears a black tailcoat over a silvery grey waistcoat and stiff-collared shirt and white bow tie, teamed with grey trousers and black shoes. Later, he stumbles in wearing a grey overcoat with black velvet collar and short decorative belt at the back and a black Homburg hat. He carries a black and white checked umbrella. Reginald Dimmock is played by Thomas Cotran. And in front of us, Dimmock metamorphoses into Rocco, the grand Italian chef with a fine operatic singing voice. His outfit was hidden beneath Dimmock's overcoat. He wears chef's whites, a long apron and chef's hat. He sticks on a false moustache, draws a chef knight in steel from his pockets and wields them as if weapons. Is he to be trusted? Rocco is played by Thomas Cotran. The officious detective marshal is summoned. He's 40 or even 50, with hunched shoulders and a scowling expression. He wears a heavy grey woollen overcoat and black bowler hat, a pencil and notebook his weapons of choice. Marshall is played by Michael Hugo. The noble and formal Prince Aribert of Posen arrives. He stands to attention and clicks his heels. He wears a short black and white houndstooth Bavarian style jacket with black lapels and shiny brass buttons over a stiff collared white shirt and silver floppy tie teamed with black and grey pinstripe trousers and black shoes. Prince Aribert is played by Thomas Cotran. Baroness Zelinsky checks out of the hotel. She's hidden beneath a full-length black overcoat with an astrakhan collar and large hat with a veil and feathers. She carries a carpet bag. A hotel porter hauls her luggage. Zelinsky is played by Shelley Atkinson. We encounter a French ticket collector at the docks. He wears a naval uniform and peaked cap, a cigarette glued to his lips. It's Michael Hugo. At the beginning of Act Two, we briefly, very briefly, meet three pirates. They wear pirate hats. Nanny Heidi is a sturdy, no-nonsense old frau. Her auburn hair plaited and wound into huge buns curled high above her ears. Eyes peer through round metal-framed glasses. She holds her hands aloft, fingers spread wide, as if in surrender, but not in surrender, as they're clad in surgical gloves that have not yet been invented. She wears a black and white checked fitted waistcoat with black piping and low front brake, with an embroidered ribbon across the front, over a white blouse teamed with a black and white pinstripe skirt. A bottle of hand gel hangs from her waist. Nanny Heidi is played by Shelley Atkinson. Delicate, wafer-thin Prince Eugene of Posen bears an agonising expression. He wears grey-striped satin pyjamas and an elaborately patterned dressing gown and black velvet slippers embellished with his heraldic crest. His mode of transport, a wooden-framed wheelchair. Prince Eugene is played by Michael Hugo. And briefly, we meet pedestrians on the streets of London, including a woman pushing a pram. And yes, Michael Hugo's the baby. Now listen on for the credits. Director, Conrad Nelson. Designer, Liz Evans. Composer, James Atherton. Lighting and projection designer, Daniela Beatty. Sound designer, Damien Caldwell. Movement director and choreographer, Beverly Norris Edmonds. The Grand Babylon Hotel, adapted by Deborah McAndrew and directed by Conrad Nelson. We hope you enjoyed the show.